Good evening, everybody. Let's get started. So normally we've been doing two shilas, but I'm going to do three tonight, and you'll tell me which one you want. The reason I'm doing three is because I'm not entirely sure that one of them is appropriate to do. So maybe you'll outvote it, if it's inappropriate. So, okay, three shilas are as follows. Last week I was involved in a Beis Din L'Giyur, and we were being megayer four people. It was at the very end of the process. We were at the mikveh. They were going for their tevila, and one of the people that we were being megayer is an African-American woman, and she was preparing for the tevila when the mikveh lady came out to the waiting room and told the Beis Din that she refuses to wash her hair. And normally, in order for a woman to go to the mikveh, she has to wash her hair as part of the process. So why does she refuse to wash her hair? Because she said the way her hair grows, it's what's called an afro, and when she washes it, it becomes extremely tangled, and she will no longer be able to comb it once she washes it. She can comb it right now, but once she washes it, it will all get tangled up. I have no idea how afros work. I tried to Google it, but I got a whole bunch of different things, and not exactly, I don't know how to Google it properly, and not exactly what I was looking for. So the shaila was, at that moment, what can we tell her to do? Can we be megayer her with her afro in tangles, with her hair all in knots? Or do you say no, better not to wash your hair? Or maybe she's got a shaver head. You know, she thought she came to a modern Orthodox Beis Din. Maybe she should become a Satmar Chassid, and that's it. And then she should have to shave her head. That's shaila number one. That is not the inappropriate one. Shaila number two. Someone sent me an email about the banana art. Just by show of hands, how many of you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, almost everyone. Okay, so banana art was as follows. There was a case where a certain artist created a piece of art, and the piece of art involved three ingredients: a white wall, duct tape, and a banana. And they duct taped a banana onto a white background, onto a white wall. And they said, that's art. That's my expression of art. And then they sold it, and it sold for $120,000. Someone paid $120,000 for the banana that was duct taped to a wall. So another fellow, who was very amazed by this, came to the museum where the art was displayed, ripped the banana off the wall, opened it, and ate it, and said, this is performance art, that he's eating the banana. But Lamaisa, someone paid $120,000 for that art. So the shaila is, what does the eater owe the fellow who bought that art? Does he owe him $120,000, or does he owe him 39 cents, right? Meaning he definitely owes him at least 39 cents, because I assume that's what a banana costs. I don't know, Dunkin' Donuts, like 99 cents. Depending where you buy your bananas, but he definitely owes him something. But does he owe him $120,000? Does he owe him 39 cents? That is shaila number two. Shaila number three I was fascinated by, but it could just be because I'm learning Hilchos Nida this year, and I wasn't asked this shaila, but Machon Pua sends out an email to Rabbanim, and they sent this shaila along with their an email this week. The shaila went as follows. A Baal Tshuva is finally getting married to a frum man, and she's excited to begin her new life as a religious woman. However, there's one thing that really bothers her, and she cannot stop thinking about it. The fact that she is not a Besula. In order for her to secure closure and to try and divorce herself from her irreligious past, she decided to undergo a hymenoplasty. What is that? Hymenoplasty is a surgical procedure which artificially reconstructs and restores a woman's hymen. She underwent the surgery and immediately felt an overwhelming sense of relief because she was now able to consider herself a Besula. Eventually, her Rav was informed that she had gone ahead with the procedure, and he was now faced with a few fascinating questions. Is she considered a besula vis-a-vis the amount of her ksuba? Is she still bound by the standard halachos of dam besulim? And is this procedure something that women should consider as an attempt to rectify their past? That's the shaila. Wasn't sure if we should do it or not. So we have shaila number one about the giores, shaila number two about the banana, and shaila number three about the hymenoplasty. All those who prefer shaila number one? Not so many. Shaila number two? Oh, many. Shaila number three? Somewhere in between. Okay, so we're going to start with shaila number three, I guess. Right, so shaila number two, right? Shaila number two, the banana shaila. Yeah. So, what are you taina? How do you answer such a shaila? So, I got an email from a friend who sent this shaila to a lawyer to see what the legal take would be, and sometimes that helps shed light on how to think about something. And I think in this case in particular, you know, normally it's finding out what American law would say about something is good for contrast. That, oh, this is what American law would say, but this is what halacha would say. But sometimes just thinking about things from a different angle really just sheds light on a situation. And in this case, I didn't necessarily think of it the way the lawyer thought of it, and I think he may be right. So let's start with the legal analysis, then we'll get to the halachic analysis, and then we'll see where we go. So the legal analysis came in as follows. That there's a difference between damaging and stealing. The thief may have damaged an artwork, but he only stole a banana. I think from a halachic perspective, certainly we would distinguish between a ganav or a gazlan and a mazik, right? Meaning he stole a banana, that's for sure. He stole a banana and he ate it. Well, as far as what he was mazik, he wasn't mazik a banana, he was mazik a piece of art. And the piece of art is no longer there. So the lawyer writes that in New York, theft is called larceny. For the purposes of the larceny statutes, the New York Penal Code defines value as the market value of the property at the time and place of a crime, or if such cannot be satisfactorily ascertained, the cost of the replacement of the property within a reasonable time after the crime. Wow, those are two very different things. That it's either defined by the value of the property at the time and place of a crime. Keep in mind, this is hanging in an art exhibit in a museum with a price tag of $120,000 that it just sold for. It just fetched $120,000. Yet, the other way to assess it is the replacement of the property within a reasonable time after the crime. How much would it cost to replace the property? However much a banana plus a piece of duct tape cost. That's how much it would cost to replace the property. So those are very, very different numbers. The banana has a replacement cost of 39 cents. The artwork has a market value of $120,000. The law says that we go by market value if you can, right? If there's a known market value, you go by market value. But wait, writes this lawyer, did the thief steal the artwork itself? The art is conceptual. This is the part that I think is important. It says the thief didn't steal the artwork. The artwork is a concept. The artist did not create the banana, nor the duct tape, nor the wall. What did the artist create? The concept of taking duct tape and a banana and putting that on a wall and quite ingeniously calling that art and managing to get someone to pay $120,000 for that. So that's the concept. The thief didn't steal the concept. The concept can never actually be stolen. In fact, what would have happened to this conceptual piece in a few weeks? What happens to a banana in a few weeks? Right? It would have to be replaced. The banana would have to be replaced. It wouldn't last very long. And the owner would have still owned the concept of his art, but the art would have been different. Maybe the banana would be a slightly different curvature or a slightly different length to it or whatever, but he still would have owned the concept of his art. He goes on to say that in New York, larceny is defined as the wrongful taking of someone's property with the intent to permanently deprive the owner of the property. The thief was an artist himself. He was correct in saying that he was creating his own work of art by eating the banana. He knew that it was impossible to permanently deprive the owner of the original work by eating the banana. I mean, he wasn't depriving the owner of the original work by eating the banana, he was just stealing a banana. He was creating his own work of performance art. Now, as far as depriving the owner of the physical piece of art, he could not do that permanently because that physical piece of art can't last permanently. It can only last for a week, and then it's going to be gone anyway. It's going to decay anyway. So, and then one last legal thing he writes is that arguably the person who ate the banana committed the crime of criminal mischief. A person commits criminal mischief when having no right to do so, nor any reasonable grounds to believe that he or she has such a right. He or she intentionally damages property of another person. Meaning, if you know that you have no right to eat this banana, and yet you go and you take it, that's called criminal mischief. There's no requirement of permanent damage or intent to permanently damage. Did the banana eater damage the original $120,000 work of art? Based on the same logic, he did not. But he did damage the banana. Okay, now, halacha. What would we say in terms of halacha? So first of all, if the banana was meant to be replaced, the actual damage is l'chora, only 39 cents. Because if the work of art is meant to be an ongoing work of art, where you replace the banana every week, so, you know, it's just a matter of replacing the banana a couple of days earlier than you're going to replace it. But if, let's say it were not replaceable, let's say they freeze-dried it, I don't know, they did something with it to make it like a permanent banana that they were gonna keep there, so then l'chora would be a shayla. So now the shayla becomes geneva and mazik, meaning, for Geneva, he can only be held accountable for the banana because there's no Kinyan Gzela on anything else, right? He didn't make a Kinyan Gzela on the art. He didn't steal the art. He just stole the banana. But as far as Mazik, it gets a little trickier. He was Mazik a piece of art. So when something can be sold to people for a price, even though 99% don't care about it, maybe that becomes its price. I mean, this is a tricky question. How do you define the price of something? If you would have showed me the banana with the duct tape and said, how much would you pay for that? I would say, nothing. I would spend 39 cents to go to the store and get banana that's not sticky with duct tape around it, right? But there is some small subset of the population that would look at that and say, genius, $120,000. That's about a year's salary worth that I would, you know, that's worth it. So there is some subset of the population that thinks like that, right? So does that define the market, right? How do we define what something is actually worth? Let's say, for example, a piece of art, let's say, has no intrinsic value on its own, because which is probably not true, because the fact that there are a group of people who would pay for it may give it intrinsic value. But if you can use this piece of art to get yourself $120,000, so there is a parallel in halacha for that. What if you have a shtar chov, and your shtar chov says that someone owes you $120,000? It's signed with Edim, Kiyum Shtaros, everything it's got, right? It says that someone owes you $120,000. And I go, and I'm Soref your Shtar Chov, or I'm Korea your Shtar Chov. I go and I tear up your Shtar. So now, you're out $120,000, because you lost the Shtar that says that someone owes you $120,000. You know, there's still like banknotes and things like that that people have and they keep in a safe somewhere, stock certificates and you know that people actually have a hard copy that they need in order to be able to prove that they're the owner of something. So how much is a piece of paper worth? A piece of paper is worth like 2 cents, right? So what's halach if I destroy your shtar chov? So it's a machlokas tanaim. We paskin like Reb Meir that we're da'in dina degarmi. This is called dina degarmi. This is indirect damage because I'm not damaging your $120,000. I'm tearing up a shtar through which you can get $120,000. If we're done dina degarmi, we are becoming the sadi ches shulchan aruch paskins this chosh mishpat simin shin peivav. So if I damage a shtar that you can collect $1,000 with, and the paper's worth 2 cents, the shach says I don't really pay either of those amounts. We're done dina degarmi, but not that I pay the full $1,000. What does it mean? I would pay how much the shtar can be resold for on the market of people who buy shtaros. Meaning the shtar might say that come 3 years from now, they were the bonds, right? Like Israel bonds. Yeah, anyone have Israel bonds? You get for your bar mitzvah, someone planted a tree in Israel for you, or someone bought an Israel bond for you. So Israel bonds. In my family, we have a lot of it. My father-in-law is very into Israel bonds, so we have a lot of Israel bonds in our family. So one day, the state of Israel is going to go bankrupt because we're going to get rich because we have all these Israel bonds coming our way. So you have a bond that is going to be worth, let's say, $10,000. When my 11-year-old daughter turns 40, right? It's gonna be worth $10,000. So someone might pay for that bond to get that promise of $10,000 in the future. How much would they pay for that bond? Well, there's the risk factor of, you know, whether Israel is still going to have the money to be able to pay up their bonds, which, you know, there are different ratings on based on the strength of the economy and the threat to their existence and things like that. So that's why it's a great... That's why we really have the inside track on the Israel bonds, because the whole rest of the world thinks that there's a threat to Israel's existence, but we know what the Nevi'im tell us. that once the Jewish people take over Eretz Yisrael again, we're never going to lose it. We're never going to lose Eretz Yisrael again. So we know this is just like the Eschalta de Gula. So we can invest where other people get a higher return rate than other people won't realize. So that's a very chash of a thing. But still, a person's not going to pay $10,000 today for the future value. They'll pay whatever they're going to pay for what it's worth today. So meaning for what the risk factor and everything else. So this case would l'chora be no worse than Dina D'Garmi, which is Chayiv B'Dinei Adam. When it comes to Grama is more indirect, right? The difference between Grama and Garmi, and these are different ways of doing damage. There's damage Ali De Grama and damage Ali De Garmi. The difference between them is very, very tricky. Rishonim are very, I wouldn't say confused, they struggle with it. Right, meaning, what do the Rishonim do? Tosfos and Maseches Babasa, Maseches Bava Kama. They essentially line up all the cases in Shas that the Gemara calls Grama, and all the cases in Shas that the Gemara calls Garmi, and then Tosfos say, okay, so what's the difference between these two lists? And they have a very, very hard time figuring out what the difference is between these two lists. But Sarif Shtarosov Shel Chavero is Garmi. It's labeled by the Gemara as Garmi. This would seem to be similar to that. That was my brother's Ha'ara. Most of the Torah I'm sharing tonight is from my brother. So that was my brother's Ha'ara. And therefore, whereas Grama Yuchai B'dinei Shemayim, Garmi Yerchai B'dinei Adam. What does it mean Yerchai B'dinei Shemayim? It means that no Bezin can force you to pay it if it were only Grama. But if you want to do the right thing and you want Lachrame of Esrim, that there shouldn't be any Tainas on you, so B'dinei Shemayim, you take care of it and you pay it back anyway. But over here it's Garmi. But then you have to question though, is this real value? Meaning, is there really a market for banana duct taped to a wall? Is there actual value to it? So if there's only one person in the world who were willing to purchase the piece of art from the current owner at that price, which I have to imagine. I never would have imagined that there would be that one person. So maybe there is this niche market of banana art buyers, that I don't know. But if there's just one person in the whole world, l'chora, that's not really the value of something. My brother pointed out that if it were, then if I destroy your car and your car is worth $5,000, you could just have someone come and say that he would have been willing to pay $100,000 for it. And then that's it. A market of one determines that it's worth $100,000. That's ridiculous.
And you said this market was clearly defined by the people who just bought it.
Yeah, so that's the difference. Even though there may have only been one person, but it already happened, meaning the market has spoken already. Obviously, after the fact, you can't have someone come after it's damaged and say, oh, I would pay $1 million for that. That's ridiculous. But if the market has spoken, that someone actually put up the money to buy it, so you could argue that it's actually worth $120,000. The Shach in Choshen Mishpat and Simen Ayin Beis, Sivkat and Kuf Chav Ches, the Shach quotes from the Bach, who holds that you'd have to pay 4 dinar for an item that you damaged, even though it's only worth 3 dinar, if to the owner it's worth 4 dinar. What does it mean to the owner it's worth 4? It has sentimental value. It's there have been studies done about this, about how much a person values something that they have already versus something that they don't yet have. And the moment you buy something, even though the market will tell you it's now worth less, right, something that's brand new, if it's pre-owned for a half a second, it loses half of its value, right? But to the owner, it goes up in value. If they would ask how much, if there was a cup of coffee there, and you would ask how much would I pay for that cup of coffee, I might say $1. If you give me that cup of coffee and ask me how much I would sell it to you for, in all likelihood, I would say $1.50. I wouldn't sell it to you for $1. But just a second ago, I wouldn't pay more than $1 for it. Right? They found that psychologically there's something, Rabbi Daniel Feldman likes to point out, that this is probably the meaning behind what the Gemara says, when you pay Deimachsra Sheyachsolo, that the mitzvah of tzedakah is to give the ani whatever he used to have and he no longer has. So the Gemara says, in Maseches Ksuvos, and probably in Babash, in the tzedakah sugya, the Gemara says that afilu sus loritz lefanav, even a horse that runs in front of him, afilu, he has a limousine, he had a limousine before, and now he's poor, he can't afford a limousine, he got to buy him a limousine. And if he used to have a mansion, now he does, so he buy a mansion. Not that you have to do it, not that that's the top priority and stuff, you should probably still take care of the people who need food before you buy this guy his Lexus, but But it is considered tzedakah, meaning it's part, it's not the highest priority in tzedakah, but it's part of the mitzvah of tzedakah. Why is that part of the mitzvah of tzedakah? So Rabbi Feldman wanted a time that's based on the psychological reality, that once a person has something, losing it is much more impactful to him than something that he's never had. So that idea might explain the Shach quotes from the Bach, that it's worth more to the guy himself, to the owner. Maybe you have to pay what it's worth to him. That's what he quotes from the Bach. The Shach writes on it that he does not believe that that's the case. Shach himself disagrees. He says, "Avol pshita she'ena posheya tzarech l'shalim yoser mimashu shavu l'kol afal b'yishu chaviv be'enei bala chefetz v'zeh boru." He says, you don't have to pay more than it's worth to everybody else, even though it may be worth more to the Bala Chefetz. That's not what you would have to pay. So the Shach disagrees with the Bach on this point. He does not think the sentimental value to the owner means anything. So does that relate to this case over here? I don't know, maybe if it's only valuable to one person, that's similar to like a sentimental value kind of thing. So even though the market has spoken, but if there's a market of one, and that's the only person that would ever pay anything for it, so maybe that would be similar to sentimental value. We also have to define what's considered gufo mamon. You know, the way you determine the value of an item, like we said, is the market. And the existence of a market would make the item inherently valuable, and you, I mean, this is a physical item, right? So it, if the existence of a market to pay $120,000 for this may make this inherently valuable, which would mean that you chayiv min adin for damaging it. The problem is that the Gemara considers ishtar chov to be a gorem lamamon, right, or a garmi, right? So either a davar a gorem lamamon kamamon davar, or it's garmi. The din of the garmi would be mechayev the mazik of shtar to pay the value of what it can be sold for, not the face value of the shtar, right? So why don't we consider shtar to be gufo mamon and say that even those who don't hold of garmi would hold that you're chayev for burning a shtar chov? Meaning we're saying that if you hold of garmi, so that's why you're going to be chayev to pay for the shtar chov. Maybe not. Maybe you don't have to hold of garmi. Garmi would mean that, you know what the shtar is worth? The shtar is worth what you can one day do, the potential of what you can get from it. But it itself is nothing. But maybe something is called inherently valuable. It's a physical object. And this is a physical object that people will pay for. Maybe that gives it value. Maybe that's called gufa mamon. It has inherent value based on that. So you have to say that the difference is that a shtar, you see, a normal item that's a physical item, that there's a market of people that will pay for it, that's called gufa mamon. That has actual value, and you pay whatever that value is. And even if you don't hold of garmi, you'd pay for that value, because it is valuable. So when you damage it, you pay for it, because you damaged it directly, not indirectly. But a shtar is different. Why is a shtar different? So the difference with a shtar is that a shtar has no inherent value. You would never use a shtar for anything else other than to collect the debt. Right? Meaning, The Gemara is an expression with cholesterol pisochisutzarich. You need to use it to wrap around your as a bottle cap. Meaning you don't use a shtar for something like that. You use a shtar just to collect the money, and that's why we look at the shtar for what it can do, not for what it is, not for its gufo mamon element. And that's why it's only because we hold of dina de garmi that you'd have to pay for it. So based on that, any other item that is used in some way, inherently used in some way, you could argue is gufo mamon. If it's gufo mamon, it's not based on what you can get for it, you know, or what someone might pay for it. It's based on what its current value is. Even if the utility is very limited, what's the utility of art? Well, it was in a museum. It was for people to see. It was people paid an entrance fee. I don't know if museums are free or not, but whatever. So some of them are not. Some of them have suggested donation or whatever. So it has actual utility. So the use is still for the item itself, not just to generate revenue from somewhere else. So when the use is the item itself, then you don't even need to come on to garmi. You're chayiv to pay because it is gufa mamon. It is inherently valuable. L'may nafkamina, meaning what difference does it make? Its inherent value is the same as we hold done in dinat garmi, so it doesn't matter. Either way, you're going to have to pay for it, luchara, because you ruined something that has a market value. One nafkamina might be, though, that garmi is only chayiv if you intentionally did it, or you were seriously negligent. The Shach writes that based on garmi is a knas, not a chiv d'oraisa. So a knas only makes sense if you were negative, if you were negligent, or if you like you did it on purpose. The Ramban in Kuntres Din D'Garmi disagrees. The Ramban holds even if you're not negligent, it's not based on knas. You just chayiv to pay it. But the Shach holds that it's only if you did it in a negligent way. So that would be the nafkamina. Let's say a person wasn't negligent. Let's say the guy didn't go into the thing and go and try to eat the banana. The guy walks into an art museum. He sees all these fancy paintings all over the wall, and he sees a banana stand. So he's hungry, and he's like, oh, free bananas. He didn't realize that they don't give out bananas there. And why should he? You know, they didn't label the art. It's just on a white wall. So he grabs a banana, he eats the banana. And he had no idea. So in such a case, if you hold that the chiyuv is only midin dina d'garmi, so then he's not going to be chayiv to pay because there was no negligence, there was no intention to damage. But if you hold it's because it's gufo mamon, that it's actually worth something, that it has inherent value because someone just paid $120,000 for it, then he's got to pay $120,000. So it'd be a huge nafkamina. But that nafkamina is irrelevant to our case, right? Because in our case, he did have kavan lahazik. Right, he went in there knowing he wanted to make a protest that some idiot paid $120,000 for this, and he wasn't happy about that. And he said, "You call that art? I call eating it art." Right? That was his whole, I think, that was his whole kunst. That's what he was trying to do. So it was clearly with intention to be mazik. So if you have intention to be mazik, then it doesn't make a difference whether you hold it's midin garmi or whether you hold it's gufa mamon. Either way, he's going to have to pay for it. Having said all that, l'chora he doesn't have to pay more than 39 cents because of what we said at the beginning. What did he actually damage? He actually damaged a banana. He didn't actually damage the art. The art is the concept, meaning there are plenty of bananas, there are plenty of pieces of duct tape. You know, someone told me, I ran into Rev Itamar Rosenzweig in the Rebbe's room upstairs, and I said, oh, you're getting Yarn Yarn Smicha, what would you, he's finishing Yarn Yarn, I said, what would you paskin on Dina Mamanis of the banana thief? He's like, seriously? he said that l'chora, 39 cents. Because he told me that he heard, I didn't go check it up online, that the artist didn't even tape the banana to the wall himself. He sent the piece of duct tape and the banana, or told them, go buy a piece of duct tape and the banana, and instructed them how many centimeters off the top of the wall it should be, how many centimeters, what angle to put the banana. But the idea was what fetched the $120,000. It wasn't the physical object. The idea you could never steal from him. Meaning, I wonder if that artist tried to do it again, if he would get even more now that he got all this publicity. But the idea you can never steal from him. So l'chora, you stole a banana from somebody, from whoever owns that banana. But the concept you haven't stole. The problem with that is that. What really fetched $120,000? Was it reward for coming up with the idea? Because meaning, the guy who bought it, right, he can't sell the idea, it wasn't his idea. Right? The guy who bought it, what can he sell? He can sell a banana. Would someone pay him $120,000 for it? Or do you say that, no, as long as this artist keeps producing this, it's since it's his idea and you can never lose an idea, and it's always his, he could keep on, buying 39-cent bananas and selling them for $120,000. It should be like we should have a marketing class on this here. You know, like we'd solve all of our economic problems. But that's I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure exactly how to view that. Then Itamar, Rav Itamar said to me, you should, once you discuss, you're discussing the Chosh Mishpat case, you should discuss in Or HaChaim. Does the Ganav make a bracha on the banana? So what are you talking about? Does he say a bracha on the banana? So there's a Gemara Masech Sanhedrin. The Gemara says that if a person is gazel sa'a shel chitim, he steals some wheat, and he's tacha, and he grinds it up, and he sifts it, and whatever, and then he bakes it into a cookie or something, and makes a dough out of it, rather, and he's mafresh challah on the dough, he should not make a bracha on the frashas challah. Ein zeh mevarich al menayitz. because you're mocking HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara has it in the sugya of Pshara, that Potseh Berich Niyetz Hashem, that it's according to one day in the Gemara, to make a Pshara is a mockery of the Din. So in that context, the Gemara tells us that Ein Zeh Mevarech Al Menayetz. But that's a Birchas HaMitzvah. What about a Birchas HaNen? I mean, you know, there's a difference. Birchas HaMitzvah, it's like, I'm going to say, I'm doing the mitzvahs of Hashem, I'm stealing something, I'm doing mitzvahs of Hashem. But Birchas HaNen is also Adam Lahanas Melam Azabla Bracha. It's an Isser to be Nana from this world. So I did one act of stealing when I stole the banana. Now I'm going to do a second act of stealing and stealing from Hashem and saying the Bracha. So that the Mishnah Berurah in Simon Kuf Tzadi Vav discusses if you stole wheat and you grind it and you make cookies out of it, machlokas whether you say a Bracha on it or not, we assume that you do not. Say a bracha on it, because all sayings are bracha l'manayitz, although you could argue that that's only when a shinoi was done with it, and when there's no shinoi done with it, there wouldn't even be a machlokas, that it would be pashut that you would not say a bracha, because a birch sananin is meant to be understood as a matir, that up until now this was asur to me, now that I recite the bracha, it's matir that I'm now allowed to eat this. Well, it's not a matir if it's a stolen item. I'm still not allowed to eat it. I have a chiyuv hashava. I have to return it. So there is no matir. So the chor, the thief, should not have said a bracha, so he got that part right. I believe he did not say a bracha. How much he has to pay? L'chorah, it's 39 cents that he has to pay, because he cannot steal the idea. Although I am somewhat confused by the fact that the fellow who he stole it from was not the Baal HaIdea, and you know, he was not the Baal HaMachshav in the first place, and what that means as far as his ownership of the banana. Okay, have a wonderful Shabbos, everybody. Thank you.